Today is Monday, March 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The world continues to combat the outbreak of the coronavirus.
From quarantining travelers from overseas to preventing people sneaking in with fevers, China and other parts of Asia are scrambling to stop the new coronavirus from coming back to where it first broke out.
Plus, Democrats went to the CNN debate stage ahead of Tuesday's primaries.
We need world leadership. We need international leadership.
And a look at language and films. Those stories and more are all next. France and Spain have joined Italy in imposing lockdowns on tens of millions of people. Australia ordered self-isolation of arriving foreigners, and other countries extended entry bans as the world sought to contain the spreading coronavirus. According to the coronavirus COVID-19 global cases by the Center for Systems Science and Engineering at Johns Hopkins University, the number of confirmed cases is at least 174,000 and at least 6,500 fatalities. A number of Asian countries are also trying to prevent the new coronavirus from re-entering their borders. The AP's Sarah Bassett has more.
From quarantining travelers from overseas to preventing people sneaking in with fevers, China and other parts of Asia are scrambling to stop the new coronavirus from coming back to where it first broke out. China, South Korea, and Japan have announced expanded border controls that mimic many of the bans and restrictions placed on China in the early days of the outbreak. Despite not having enough for its own medical workers a few weeks ago, China is now donating supplies to Italy, Iran, and other affected areas. I'm Sarah Bassett.
South Africa has announced strong measures to slow the spread of the coronavirus just a week after the nation saw its first case, and then tens more in the space of a week. On Sunday, President Cyril Ramaphosa effectively shut down all borders, schools, and large gatherings across the country. In Johannesburg, the nation's economic and transport hub, residents reacted to the news. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The rise of coronavirus cases in South Africa has prompted President Cyril Ramaphosa to announce tough measures to try to slow the virus from spreading. Ramaphosa on Sunday banned travel from high-risk countries, public gatherings of more than 100 people, and closed all schools from Wednesday.
We've decided to take urgent and drastic measures to manage the disease, protect the people of our country, and to reduce the impact of the virus on our society and on our economy. We have now declared a national state of disaster in terms of the Disaster Management Act. This will enable us to have an integrated and coordinated disaster management mechanism that will focus on preventing and reducing the outbreak of this virus.
The travel ban includes anyone arriving from Britain, China, Germany, Iran, Italy, South Korea, Spain, and the United States. South Africa's government this past weekend repatriated 114 of its citizens from Wuhan, the Chinese city where the outbreak started. They will be kept in quarantine for 3 weeks, though none have tested positive for the virus. In South Africa's economic and transportation hub, Johannesburg, the city's minibus taxi ranks are usually a hive of activity. But on Monday morning, the streets were quiet, as people appeared to be taking the president's warnings seriously. 74-year-old lawyer Philip Vallette says he is worried about the toll on his business.
My worry is how long is it going to take? Because from our business point of view, and if we have to shut down parts of our business or drastically interfere with our business's run, I'm just worried about how long we can stand it. And I'm worried about our staff. I'm worried about the taxis. If there are no taxis and there are no buses, we might not have a business.
Project manager Pili Chikale says she may have to cancel as many as 18 upcoming plans, but she agrees with the president's strict measures.
I think it was just the right time because of all this time we've been taking this disease lightly. It's only now that the president has made us aware of the seriousness and how much it's going to affect us that we're also aware that, oh no, this is really a big deal and we should now start taking care of ourselves.
But not all South Africans are concerned about coronavirus. Some say they'll continue as usual, like sales consultant Mandla Kmube.
I'm not worried, not a bit. I mean, at work, I'm already, exposed. I said my guys are well traveled, so I'm exposed. So I'm already exposed, so I can't lose at work. And
but Ramaphosa's urging the Rainbow Nation, already struggling with high unemployment and power cuts, to rise to the challenge posed by coronavirus. The respiratory illness has infected a confirmed 170,000 people worldwide since December. But health officials fear the number of unconfirmed cases could be much higher. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Philippines imposed strict home quarantine measures and a halt on work and transport across its main island of Luzon on Monday, putting half of the population on lockdown in an aggressive bid to quell the cases of the coronavirus. With panic buying and fear-driven sell-offs in the stock markets, the U.S. Federal Reserve cut interest rates to near zero on Sunday in another emergency move to help shore up the U.S. economy amid the rapidly escalating coronavirus pandemic. The move, however, did little to calm markets, with most major stock indices down more than 4% worldwide. Fiat Chrysler Automobiles is halting production for 2 weeks at most of its European plants to help protect staff against the coronavirus pandemic and adjust to a slump in demand. Italy has been the European country worst hit by the crisis. European Union finance ministers plan to decide on Monday on a coordinated economic response to the pandemic. The European Commission forecasts the effects of the virus could push the EU into a recession. And the Vatican has made an unprecedented decision. All Holy Week services with Pope Francis will be held without a congregation, including the Easter Sunday Mass. Sabina Castelfranco has those details.
It will be a very different Holy Week for the faithful this year, particularly for those in Rome. No one will be able to attend any of the services due to the coronavirus outbreak. The large crowds in St. Peter's Square will not be possible this year. A note on the website of the Prefecture of the Pontifical Household that appeared late Saturday said the faithful will be able to follow the events as they are streamed on the internet or carried on television, but no one will be able to actively participate. Holy Week is normally one of the busiest times of the year for Pope Francis, with tens of thousands of people arriving from all over the world to join in celebrating the resurrection of Jesus. It is still unclear how the services will be held by the Pope or where exactly, as the Vatican is still to provide further details. Holy Week services begin on Palm Sunday, which marks Jesus's triumphant entry into Jerusalem. Other important services include Holy Thursday Mass, when the oils are blessed. Normally on that day, Pope Francis washes the feet of prisoners, but this is unlikely to happen this year. The Lord's Passion service is normally held in St. Peter's Basilica on Good Friday, followed by the Way of the Cross around Rome's ancient Colosseum. This too is likely to be cancelled or will take place without public participation. Pope Francis will still be giving his twice yearly Urbi et Orbi blessing on Easter Sunday. Italian authorities locked down the entire country last Monday as the death toll from the coronavirus outbreak continues to soar. There are currently more than 21,000 positive cases in the country, and the death toll has reached 1,441. Churches in Rome have been reopened, but all masses are cancelled to avoid people gathering in one place. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News.
The number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Australia continues to rise. Doctors say infections do not, at least at this stage, appear to be influenced by warmer weather. Last month, U.S. President Donald Trump predicted the pandemic would end in April with warmer temperatures in the Northern Hemisphere. Phil Mercer has more.
Scientists around the world are racing to unlock the secrets of the COVID-19 virus in search of a vaccine. The disease was first reported in China late last year. Some experts have been hoping the new coronavirus might behave like influenza that thrives in cold, dry air and start to fade as the summer months arrive in temperate parts of the Northern Hemisphere. Understanding any seasonality of COVID-19 could eventually help to determine the best time to administer any vaccine. However, there are no clear signs that warmer conditions will subdue or stop the virus. Australia is in the first month of autumn, but temperatures are still in the 20s and 30s Celsius, and infections continue to increase. Brad McKay, a Sydney doctor and author, says the indications here are that heat has not slowed the spread of COVID-19.
We are seeing that things have been pretty terrible in the Northern Hemisphere, and particularly around Italy. We hope that as the summer months come along that things will improve, but we really don't know. And we're still seeing the spread very quickly throughout Australia, and the weather's still been relatively warm and hot. So I can't say that the sun will save people. I think that the virus can still spread from people to people even during the summer months.
Australia and New Zealand have now ordered all international arrivals into mandatory quarantine in a bid to slow the spread of the new coronavirus. It's unclear how Australia's coronavirus quarantine orders will be enforced. The government has said that everyone arriving from overseas will have to shut themselves away for 2 weeks. Those who don't will be committing an offence, according to the Prime Minister. Foreign cruise liners will also be prevented from docking in Australia for 30 days. Gatherings of 500 people or more are also banned from Monday. Cases of the COVID-19 virus have been confirmed in every Australian state. Phil Mercer for VOA News. Sydney.
A dispute over Afghanistan's presidential election and an outbreak of the coronavirus in the country appear to have further complicated an already troubled effort the United States is making to help find a negotiated end to the nearly 19 years of war. Officials in southern Kandahar province told VOA that a suspected Taliban infiltrator killed at least seven Afghan security forces on Sunday. The landmark deal was supposed to lead to a further reduction in violence and pave the way for an opening of intra-Afghan peace negotiations beginning March 10th. But disagreements over a prisoner swap between the Afghan government and the Taliban have delayed the peace dialogue. Kabul was supposed to release up to 5,000 Taliban prisoners in exchange for 1,000 detainees. But Afghan President Ashraf Ghani only allowed for a conditional release of 1,500 prisoners. The Taliban swiftly rejected the plan and demanded the immediate unconditional release of all prisoners. For its part in the deal signed with the Taliban, Washington began a conditions-based drawdown of U.S. forces from the country. Still to come in the program.
It's not surprising because the transmission of language is often left to the women and in the domestic space of child rearing. So it's the women who are often tasked with the cultural transmission of the language.
You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to scientists, nearly 800,000 years ago, a 2-kilometer-wide meteorite struck the Earth with such force that debris from the collision was flung over Asia, Australia, and Antarctica. What has long been a mystery is that the impact crater from the tremendous strike has never been found. Researchers led by Nanyang Technological University in Singapore say they have found what might be the location of the missing impact crater. After gathering geophysical and geochronological evidence, the researchers suggest that the crater is buried beneath the Bulawayo Plateau volcanic field in southern Laos. The scientists say their evidence indicates that the crater is approximately 15 kilometers wide. A study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences details their findings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The last two major U.S. Democratic presidential candidates, former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, clashed Sunday night on cable news broadcaster CNN in a spirited debate on a range of issues as they made their best case to be the party's nominee to face Republican President Donald Trump in November's national election. Sanders had harsh words for President Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic.
It is unacceptable for him to be blabbering with unfactual information, which is confusing the general public. Second of all, what we need to do, and I'm glad that he has called a state of national emergency.
Biden, in the CNN debate, called for American leadership in the crisis.
We need international leadership. We need someone who knows how to bring the world together and insist on fundamental change in the way in which we're approaching this.
With the November election approaching and another set of primaries scheduled to take place Tuesday, where do things sit in American politics? For that, I spoke with Matthew Kerbel, a political science professor at Villanova University.
In flux. I mean, we are right now in a period the likes of which we have never seen. We have four primaries taking place tomorrow at a time where more and more states and localities are telling people to stay home and not congregate. And yet we're asking people to go out and vote. We have a situation where just several weeks ago, the entire contour of the campaign was different. If you looked at the debate on Sunday night, you saw a debate that was clearly, clearly overwhelmed by the pandemic. Just in terms of the structure of the debate, there was no studio audience. The candidates were at podiums, the requisite 6 feet apart from each other. They didn't shake hands, right? They did a little elbow bump. So you could see everywhere the effects of the coronavirus. And of course, the first portion of the debate and the closing portion of the debate were devoted to the coronavirus. We are in uncharted territory politically.
So what does this do for the November election? I mean, can you recall in American history, aside from wartime, where there's been such a national focus on one single event?
Well, I think the question maybe is, when was the last time there was a focus on a single national event, which itself affected campaigns and elections? Because even before we get to November, there are questions of how presidential primaries are going to be held, or if they're going to be held. A couple of states have already postponed their primaries. Will there be conventions this summer? You can't imagine a larger gathering than a national convention.
It's incredible how much everything is coming forward with not only the coronavirus, but the elections and the economy, and how everything is just convoluted and interwoven, and you know, the amount of stress and concern that everybody has.
Oh, well, absolutely. So, I mean, you're exactly right. So you have the election, but then you layer on top of that the concerns about the virus, which are being received differently by different groups of people and in different parts of the country, but which is now very clearly front and center of the national consciousness. And in places, it's already reached crisis proportions. So you see that playing out. There is the economic crisis that's being driven by the public health crisis. I suspect the public health crisis will be paramount over the near term, and the economic crisis may be more enduring and be paramount as we look at some of the out months this year. But it's very hard not to see this as an enormous inflection point for our politics.
That was Matthew Kerbel, a political science professor at Villanova University. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday proposed an emergency government to tackle the coronavirus crisis after his corruption trial was delayed for 2 months due to the outbreak. Reuters' David Doyle has that story.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday proposed a six-month emergency government to tackle coronavirus, just as the epidemic delayed his corruption trial by 2 months. The cases against Netanyahu, including charges which he denies of bribery, breach of trust and fraud, had been due to start on Tuesday. But Israel's justice minister said the trial would now begin on May 24th due to developments related to the spread of coronavirus. Also this week, Israel's president was poised to pick a candidate to try and form a governing coalition. That's after Israel's third election in a year on March the 2nd proved once again to be inconclusive, with neither Netanyahu's right-wing Likud or his main rival Benny Gantz's Blue and White securing enough seats for an outright majority. On Sunday, Netanyahu made an offer to Gantz via Twitter to form a national emergency government. That, Netanyahu said, would mean that unlike under the current caretaker government, Israel would be able to pass a budget and, quote, make difficult decisions. He also offered a four-year unity administration, under which Netanyahu would be prime minister for the first 2 years before Gantz took over. Gantz signaled he was open to a unity government, but cast doubts on Netanyahu's true intentions. Were Netanyahu sincere, Gantz tweeted, then he would send a negotiating team to Blue and White rather than make proposals via social media.
That was Reuters reporter David Doyle. Every year, the Smithsonian's Mother Tongue Film Festival in Washington, D.C. celebrates cultural and linguistic diversity by showcasing films in indigenous languages from all over the world. VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke with their curators and some of the filmmakers on how these ancient languages are the link between the past and the present.
Anaki Marilwan, a Mapuche lyricist and composer, stars in the music video Pyre, filmed in southern Argentina. The lyrics are written in the ancestral tongue of the Mapuche people, called Mapuzungun. This is one of 21 films, each spotlighting an indigenous language, showcased at the Mother Tongue Film Festival.
Mother tongue is a more universal concept, and we've been able to go work across topics across the world and cover issues like language recovery, transmission across generations, working through platforms like hip hop or other forms of music and dance and other cultural expressions.
Many of these ancient languages are dying out. Filmmakers want to preserve them. The short film Uta means whale hunter in the Nootka language in British Columbia, Canada. Filmmaker Chad Charlie is a member of the Nootka Nation. The story is about a young man who becomes the chief of his village, the chief of his tribe. His grandmother walks him through the lessons and the preparations of being that leader.
Uta suwasitsk tupatli ushtup kwachilish anasik nitlak.
There are about 6,000.